music from Jim Cole, his song Learning and Unlearning at 13 minutes after the hour. We're joined by Dr. Don Clark from Garden Valley, Texas. David is in the newsroom and we're all primed and ready to talk about global warming. But first, how was your trip back home? I know you were at the board meeting for Creation Moments mid-month in September, and then you kind of took a circuitous route home, but you made it home to the winery and you're safe and sound. That's good to know.
I did make it home. It was actually a pleasant trip driving home. It was a little crowded through St. Cloud, so it took me a little time getting through there. But once I got through there, I was driving in the countryside in Minnesota, because I had to go to South Central, I guess, Minnesota to meet with my cousin, and then we had a good visit. We visited some wineries that afternoon.
Minnesota wineries, huh?
In Minnesota, yes. We visited some Minnesota wineries.
Where the grapes can suffer. Yeah.
Well, yes. One winery really had a fledgling vineyard. The other winery had a pretty good vineyard, but they too were getting their grapes from other locations, including Washington State and California.
Aha, importing.
Okay. Yeah, importing.
For those of you who don't know, Dr. Don in Garden Valley, Texas, is a fledgling, there's that word again, vigneron, right?
Yep.
Vigneron and vintner.
And vintner. Okay, a vigneron grows the grapes, a vintner makes the wine.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, I got it now. So we've been following his adventures in his and for example, he was gone on a trip to another board for another one of the ministries that he's on in Seattle, and while he was gone, the grapes ripened and the Japanese beetles ate them all. Hmm. So now, there's an adventure.
Did you say the vigneron makes the wine?
No,
is that what you said?
Vintner,
you said the other way around.
Vintner would make the wine. Okay. Vigneron grows the grapes and battles Japanese beetles and wild pigs. You didn't know that was part of the deal, did you, Dr. Don?
Oh no, didn't realize it was going to be such an effort here in East Texas to grow to grow grapes. There's a reason why most of the grape growing is done in drier climates for sure.
And highly populated areas where there's a shortage of wildlife, I think. Also, like I wouldn't have thought of having to keep the pigs out of the vineyard and then the Japanese beetles. And you battled viruses and bacteria as well, haven't you?
Well, we battled pretty much everything that can consume a grape or a grapevine. Mm-hmm. Between the fungus problems, got that problem solved this year. But had a tremendous insect problems. We also had grasshoppers and the grape berry moth, just a whole bunch of stuff attacking our grapes, not to mention, you know, of course, the pigs. The pigs came back. The feral pigs.
They're back.
They didn't do as much damage this year, but the insects did. So
I can see Dr. Don on guard duty in the deep, dark hours of the night with his pith helmet and fly swatter. Out in the vineyard, watching for intruders, must be a hazardous duty there, Don.
Oh, yeah. If you want to get up, 3 o'clock in the morning to wait for the pigs to come by, which is typically around.
Can you fence?
3:30.
Can you fence it in? Is it fenceable, or is it too big an area to fence economically? Maybe.
Well, we did fence 2 1/4 sides of our vineyard. Mm-hmm. And the fence went down. We had to put in an 8-foot field fence to keep the deer out and the pigs. Mm-hmm. And the fence went down into the pond, but it didn't go down far enough. Uh-huh. And so the pigs just walked around the end of the fence and came in the vineyard that way.
Oh,
and
clever, clever devils, aren't they? Mm-hmm. Well,
I have pictures of deer doing the same thing, and I'm saying, "What is this?" I might as well just
Well, it's nice that you can put cameras out there, so you know what's ruining your life. Instead of just taking
They got a picture of a raccoon too, the raccoon wasn't attacking the vineyard yet.
Maybe you can sell the photos, you know, that'd be worth something.
It's Yeah, I could start another wildlife picture book.
Yeah, another preserve, another something you can sell tickets to.
Now, Dr. Don Clark is a biochemist and a member of the board at Creation Moments, and we talk to him just about every week. Now on Tuesday mornings, used to be Mondays, now it's Tuesday mornings, and we talk about things like creation and evolution and science and faith. And this morning, Don has picked an article for us on global warming. And the headline says, "New study on the cause of global warming might take people by surprise." What's this about, Don?
Well, it was a study actually done by some folks in the Northwest, looking at the slight, and it's a very slight global, I mean, it wasn't even global warming. It mm-hmm. was regional warming of the Northwest. And so they went back and collected data from 1900 to 2012, analyzed the data a number of different ways, including using the current climate models.
This would be temperature data, then, records of temperatures.
It was records mm-hmm. of temperatures. So they were looking at sea temperatures in the Northwest as well as land temperatures. And what they found was the variation. It was a multi-decade variation in the weather and in the temperatures, which could not be attributed to man-made causes, which a lot of people got upset about, but was seemingly due to, you know, just a natural cycle of weather changes. Mm-hmm. Most of the weather change actually occurred earlier in the 1910, 1920, 1940 time period. Recently the weather hasn't really changed all that much.
Mm-hmm. Now, the people who are... talking about global warming, claiming it's happened and that it's caused by man, has relate this primarily to the carbon footprint, which means the consumption or the use of carbon-based fuels, correct? Which wouldn't have happened in huge numbers, in huge areas, until after automobiles really got cranked up, probably 30s and 40s.
Yeah, automobiles, I mean, trucks, we've got trucks going up and mm-hmm. down the freeways, you know, constantly. Of course, we're consuming, you know, electric, they blamed it on coal fired power plants, mm-hmm. and so we've pretty much shut those down. You know, all because of this global warming fiasco or propaganda that's been promoted. And the more detailed studies that are done can come out the same way, and basically CO2 has very little effect on our climate. They keep, you know, they keep calling it the greenhouse effect and all this other stuff, but CO2 is very inefficient in blocking the sun from, you know, hitting or from increasing temperatures on the surface of the earth. Water vapor is much more efficient at that, you know, these folks don't want to consider that the natural cycles within the sun, that is the sunspot activity and the activity that the amount of energy that the sun is producing, has much more of an effect on our climate, and this has been shown time and time again, than anything that man has ever done. Mm-hmm. Even obviously volcanoes, for example, if they spew their dust way out in the upper parts of the atmosphere, that will have a temporary, effect on our climate, typically cooling it down in some regions as opposed to other regions. So there, you know, natural causes tend to come up more as the explanation for these variations in climate change.
Now, this article is over at The Blaze, and we'll link to it for the podcast with Dr. Don. That'll be up on the website a little later this morning. But taking one sentence from this article, it says, according to the news release from the National and Atmospheric Administration's Southwest Fisheries Science Center, The study, on a broader note, shows how regional climate could skew interpretations of what is going on with the climate on a global scale. And that's something we've been saying all around, all along, hasn't it? That you know, we keep looking at well, it's warmer here, therefore the whole world must be warmer, or it's cooler here, so it must be cooling. It seems to be a lot of indecision on that score.
Well, and not only you can't look at one region and say, oh, the globe is warming or the climate is changing. Mm-hmm. You've got to look at it globally wide. And
well, how do they do that? Do they take temperatures every 20 miles and then average them to get how do they figure an average temperature for the whole world?
Well, you would have to take temperatures all the way around the world, and of course we have the technology now to do that. You can do it by satellite, by infrared imaging, and determine the temperatures on a global basis
easily. But then you'd have to compare that with past readings and how reliable and
that would
are past
have to
readings.
Be done by whatever you have in the historical records,
the best that you have, which is probably not very comprehensive in terms of global temperature.
Right. In some places, will like the United States, we can go back quite a ways, but in other parts of the world that may not be the case, since they, may not have good records.
Well, we can go back 100 years, but what if there's a weather cycle that happens every 500 years, or every 1,000 years, or every 10,000 years?
Well, we wouldn't know that,
yeah.
Would we?
No.
No, and the interesting thing, a lot of these folks that are, claiming that man's having this major impact on the global climate, they don't even call it global warming anymore, because there is absolutely no proof that the globe is warming up. The temperatures over the past 17 years, where they've been keeping very accurate global data, has shown that the global temperatures just haven't gone up at all. So they changed the name from global warming to global climate change, because the climate is changing. Well, as you just pointed out, how do we know that we're just not in another cycle? And in some areas it's getting warmer, in some areas it's getting colder. Now, one of the areas where it's appears to be slightly getting warmer is actually in the Arctic, because one of the things that kicked this whole thing off is, oh my goodness, we're losing global ice. We're losing ice in the Arctic, and the ice is thinning and it's breaking up, and we're at a very low point in the amount of ice that's in the Arctic. But if you just took that as one location and saying we have a problem, you could certainly set up a panic of, maybe something really is going on with our global climate. And you see, that's evidence of global warming. But if you look at the Antarctic, for example, the Antarctic ice has been growing by leaps and bounds. So we've got the Arctic getting slightly warmer, but we've got the Antarctic getting slightly colder, and the two are kind of balancing off each other. So the amount of ice that's being lost, for example, in the Antarctic, in the Arctic, is more than being compensated for the amount of ice being formed in the Antarctic. So globally, nothing's happening other than we got a little shift in climate, north to south or south to north. Is that cause for concern? I don't know. Maybe where we couldn't grow crops before, we might be able to, grow crops, and vice versa.
it occurs to me that we're gathering all this data and doing computer models and applying technology and all kinds of expertise to this. So we have all this data, and we don't know what to do with it. We still can't predict the weather very reliably more than 3 or 4 days out for any particular location. It's almost like somebody, I've got all this data, I've got to do something with it. I think we'll talk about global warming and see what happens.
Well, and that's correct. And some of the critics of this particular article, which was published in the Journal of Proceedings of the National Academy of Science, a well-respected journal, for example, some of the critics of the article were saying, well, you know, this study is not about what's really happening, you know, to our temperatures, and not that man's not having any effect. The study really points to the state of affairs of our climate models. Maybe our climate models isn't as good as we thought they were.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's so if your models aren't good, why are you using the models to say that we have a problem? You know?
Yeah.
It's kind of
backwards circular logic.
You can't blame the model when you don't like the results and use the model when you want to get the results that you're interested in, and that is that there's anthropomorphic the changes in the temperatures and the fluctuations in our climate are man caused as opposed to natural caused.
Yeah, the article itself is as I read it, not denying global warming, but simply saying whatever is happening is not caused by man. And we've talked many times here on the program about the Earth's own natural processes that correct imbalances. And well, you can name a couple of those for us, can't you?
Well, we can. I mean, for example, there are kind of whirlwind in the oceans, kind of whirlpools in the oceans that actually suck up CO2 from the atmosphere and deposit it as calcium carbonate on the ocean floor. I mean, that's one. I mean, you know, nature has the ability to regulate itself and to balance off things. The more CO2 actually that you have in the atmosphere, the better the plants like it, and the more plants you have. So one would think that, gee, we need more CO2 in the atmosphere so that we can grow more plants and they'll be happier because they're converting the CO2, the carbon dioxide, in the atmosphere into sugars, into more plant material, which, you know, will benefit us not only from, feeding the world population, but, also for fuel sources and other such things.
You know, if we can kind of transport this discussion to a more philosophic level, this has all the symptoms of putting, it's a humanistic approach to existence. It's putting mankind at the center. We're at fault. We're the only people that can cure it. And we've got to do something now. So let's rearrange economies. Let's move dollars around. Let's focus our attention on this problem and that problem. And, of course, that involves politics. And it seems to ignore all those natural processes. And it also tends to put man above all else.
Right. And man's the cause of everything. And so we've got to those nations which are causing more CO2 emissions, which, of course, are the developed nations for the most part, although second-level governments and nations are, also producing more toxins because they don't have all of the pollution controls.
Well,
China
among
have.
The worst, yeah.
But we can't tax them because they don't have any money to begin with. So let's tax the prosperous nations so we can then redistribute the money around the world where it belongs.
And take 10% for ourselves.
Well, absolutely, yeah. If not more. We'll take.
So it becomes a fight for economic equity then.
And besides, I get this really nice cushy job in a corner office.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and this is not a science issue. Yes, the scientists can argue back and forth whether or not man is responsible, but there are more and more climatologists, for example, those that are actually in this field, that are saying, hey, you know, man has nothing to do with this. That's a bunch of hogwash. It's all about nature and the natural cycles of things. And to say that man has a role in this is fallacious, but it seems like the politicians are certainly picking up on this, as I said, because Their goal is to make the rich nations poor and the poorer nations less poor, while they pocket the some of the change for themselves.
Yeah, even the folks on the ground, the ones in the recent protest in New York, who were walking up and down and yelling and screaming and throwing rocks. And there was a series of interviews, and I think it was something on a nice conservative radio station like NPR. And the primary, if there was a unified statement from all of the people that were asked questions about why are you here, what do you hope to accomplish, what do you want to get out of this, it was, we've got to destroy capitalism. We've got to have socialism on the earth. We've got to replace all this nasty, greedy, rich white guy stuff. We got to get rid of these people. We got to get this country back on a solid, sure footing, back to socialism. And I've heard many people say that that the environmental movement, particularly global warming and whatever they want to call it, is a nice current home for the Communist Party. And the old style communists have nowhere else to go, so it's a good place to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, absolutely.
The green movement.
Climate change and tree hugging is one of the favorites of those folks.
Oh man, it's just, well, there's no sense to it. I mean, there doesn't seem to be any logic, and if you ask and question any of the logic, then it's, well, I didn't really mean cooling, I meant warming. Oh, I'm sorry, did I mean warming? No, I meant cooling. Mm-hmm. I don't mean to dominate the conversation, but I saw a report last night or the night before on one of the local news channels, and it was supposedly a doctor, at least that's what the crawl space said underneath his name, and he went on and on and on about infectious diseases and Ebola and the enterovirus and how more and more of us are being infected, and he said the world has become flat. Because anybody can get on a plane and within an hour infect a whole new, brand new population. And he said all of this is due to the speed of technology and how fast things move and global warming. And I said, huh?
Yeah, how does that...
what did you have a little card, a little 3x5 card on your desk saying, no matter what you say, mention global warming at the end?
Mm-hmm.
That it was irrelevant, totally irrelevant, and nothing to do with anything he said.
Now, people have contending with extreme weather all around the world forever, for as long as mankind's been here. And I don't know that we have an accurate history, at least not accurate enough, to really measure today's weather against weather 200 years ago or 300 years ago. There are legends and stories about the horrific winters of the 1890s that killed off the cattle industry in large measure and drove ranchers just out of business. There are years where there have been terrible hurricanes. This year was pretty quiet, wasn't it? At least at this end of the globe.
There hasn't been a major hurricane in the last 12 years.
Hmm.
Well, I mean, it's just lots of storms in the Atlantic.
I suppose, yeah.
And we've had notably two, maybe three in the last decade and a half. Mm-hmm. And this is the time when there is supposed, we should be blown out of our socks right up here in East Dakota.
Mm-hmm.
We're not.
Yeah.
When you present those kinds of information, those kinds of, Al Gore said that by now we'd be covered in ice up to our hips.
Mm-hmm.
Al, what are you going to give the money back? How about the Oscar? You want to give that back too? What about the Nobel Prize?
He got an Oscar? No, Pulitzer. Well, what did he get?
Yeah, he got a Nobel Prize.
Okay, all right.
I mean, just, and for being monumentally wrong, he gets to keep all his toys, and we still believe him. I don't believe him, but
yep, yeah, it's definitely a big propaganda push to, I don't think there's a whole lot of people that really truly believe this. I mean, we had one of our programs that we did was on one of the climate change conferences in Europe, and the price of admission was that you had to say that there was actually global warming going on.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the moderators was saying, you know, if you want to get research money, for example, you better come up with a global warming or a climate change story. Otherwise, you're not going to get any funding. So, you know, this whole area of research is being highly skewed by, these poor folks in the Northwest are probably not going to get any more funding.
I would be curious to know if there's any movement among Christians to support or maybe start their own movement over global warming and raise the flag of God's requirement for stewardship, that we're stewards of the planet. We better be taking care of it. Now, I take that seriously. Stewardship certainly is assigned to us in our role as human beings. But you don't hear that. I don't hear Christian sources raising the flag of global warming and saying, you know, how I guess what I'm asking is the so-called green movement worldwide, how much of that is Christian and how much is it not? Do you have any inkling? Are the Christian organizations involved?
Most of it is not. Most of it is.
I would say none.
Yeah.
I'm not aware of any of it.
It's, you know, it's more New Age movement than any. They talk about, you know, Mother Gaia. The creation has become the God instead of the creator. So they worship the creation as opposed to the creator. That's what, you know, that movement's all about. And I don't think any Christian would want to be a part of it. We are to be good stewards. And so, okay, if you want to put, you know, scrubbers on smokestacks to clean up the air before it gets into our atmosphere, that makes a lot of sense. But to purify the water coming out of your manufacturing plant before it goes into the streams. But the more and more regulations you put on businesses and manufacturing, the more they're going to leave the United States and go to places where there's less regulation, simply because they can't, it's cheaper to manufacture over there than it is to over here because of all the regulations that we put on. Mm-hmm. And I think we really need to be looking at that and just not saying, well, we're not going to allow a company to manufacture, to move their manufacturing plant or their offices off, you know, outside of the United States because of our tax structure or our regulations are so great that they can do business better is somewhere else. Mm-hmm. That's probably had a greater impact on the poor in other countries than anything, you know, this government is doing. So in essence, by their increased, regulation and taxation, have distributed wealth, but at the same time, we have lost jobs in the manufacturing section tremendously over the last 50 years or so.
Mm-hmm. Now a lot of us will there are conspiracy theories that say there's a group of people or a group of national leaders or a council someplace, some mysterious unnamed people that have planned all this. Do you hold to that, or is this more of our own ignorance of the effects of all these policies and tax codes and so forth? Are we doing this by accident, unaware of the consequences, or is something like this possible to plan?
Well, there is a global governance. Actually, I haven't searched for it in years, but there was
the old Trilateral Commission.
There was a group called Global Governance, and if you go on the internet and search for global governance, they used to have a website, and they outlined their plan for global governance. Mm-hmm. One of them was to reduce the world population. I mean, it's disturbing the things that they have on the website, but if you look at what's happening, you know, not only here but in Europe and around the globe with politics and the things that they're doing, they're following that agenda pretty closely.
Well, who are they though? Who are they?
Well, I think it lists the people that have that are involved mm-hmm. in that, and at least it did. I don't, you know. So this there is, I think, you know, locally you get a group of people together and they get all excited about something, and just like we had all the folks talking about. In the U.S. recently, talking about we need to protect Mother Earth and everything, but you get, I think the overall agenda for the major politics comes out from a standardized group of folks,
mm-hmm. organization. Yeah, you could put Barack Obama's name not at the head of the list, because he's a tool of some of the other folks that are much more involved. Ban Ki-moon, I would say, is a national leader in the World Governance Organization, the head of the UN. He didn't run for that job and just kind of slide into it accidentally. There was an intent. He's something that he's wanted to do for quite some time. I've Googled global governance, and Wikipedia's got a fairly good sized page on it. There also seems to there's an organization, and they mentioned the G20. Well, in this particular case, it's suggestions for the G20 on things that they should do. There is a Global Governance Institute, and it's globalgovernance.eu, so it's European.
Mm-hmm.
Don, you missed my fate with the computer that's going crazy. It's having its way with me. It is just going nuts. I mean, every time it's interesting. I've got about three websites that I visited this morning where there's nothing that pops up on the bottom row, and everything else. I've got debt counseling offers and new insurance and Asian dating and you name the activity. I haven't seen anybody try to sell me Texas wine yet.
Yeah, no.
But that's about the only thing.
Okay,
that's about the only thing. But there's a Global Governance Institute. It's long term, or its long name is Global Governance, and I just lost that. No. Role of Media in Violent Conflict. Second edition of Executive Course in Global Risk Analysis and Crisis Management.
Mm-hmm.
They're hosting organizations, roundtables. Let's see if I can find an About Us and maybe get some names for you. Partnerships and partners and list of folks that are involved in that sort of thing. So there are people. I mean, there are specific individuals.
Like they're looking for supporters there, for contributors, people who would help fund the effort.
So. Yeah. Well, and in many cases, it's people that have got can benefit themselves.
Mm-hmm. Well, could be.
What a much nicer, better way to do things if everybody did it my way, opposed to this freedom and democracy business.
Well, we've been talking about an article over at The Blaze on global warming, and we've kind of taken off from there. But the essence of the article was that it's not denying global warming, but it is saying that the cause may be other than man. And I think you'll find it of interest. We'll have it linked to the podcast today on the Broken Road Radio website. So we've been talking with Dr. Don Clark, on the board of directors of Creation Moments, and you can visit their website at creationmoments.com. Lots of worthwhile things to see there. Lots of good resources for you and your small group studies and your church library. You could find a whole lot of usefulness over there at creationmoments.com. You can link to them from our site at Broken Road Radio. Dr. Don, thanks so much for joining us again today. Appreciate it.
Well, you're quite welcome, and it's been fun as usual.
Glad to have you home safe in Texas again. And we'll talk to you next Tuesday, okay?
All right, sounds good.